Hello and welcome back. I am Rick Watson. And if you're watching the Watson Weekend, there are only two shows left before our holiday breakup. Oh, Jess, it seems like only yesterday we were just talking about tariffs. And those are good old days.
Oh, so many. Yes. Tariffs be gone. Sort of like COVID. 2025 has been a roller coaster, Rick. We've lived every minute of it. The ups, the downs, the highs and lows. And I think we're rolling out of here 50 cent style on a high.
Exactly. Always high. Actually, next week, we have a very special edition coming up. We invited some of the best voices in e-commerce and retail to come on and challenge us, meaning Nick Kaplan and myself, to a seasonal game of Jeopardy. So we're excited about that.
It's going to be a big one. And yours truly, me, they've actually allowed me to host again. I'm no Alec Trebek. I'm no Ken Jennings. But I can wrangle the misfits here and there. So we are going to see if, Rick, you need to do a test run. Or are you going to hold your cards? Like, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'll try not to cry if I lose. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Yeah. So break down who is coming so everyone can mark their calendars.
Yeah. So we have the Future Commerce Podcast, Philip Jackson, the Retail Geeks and the Agentic Gut Giants, Scott Wingo and Jason Goldberg, and from the Retail Razor Tea, Ricardo Belmar. So,
yeah,
yes,
it is going to be the champs of all champs. And we're really going to test all your knowledge, all the things that have happened this year in retail. It's going to be a lot of fun, but how are you feeling, Rick? You nervous? You ready? Game on?
I think I'm justifiably nervous, really.
Yeah, same thing. And then Nick Kaplan will be back as well.
Yes.
In the mix. So the Nick and Rick show, we're going to keep that going. So we're going to be heading into a lot to unpack in this show. We've got James Lang from Ulta. We have our headline hangover. I'm going to be doing some holiday ad recaps because I've missed that this year. So, since it's our next to final show, I want to do a little homage to the creatives of the world that are not AI, who are bringing all this, television enjoyment to us. Because where would we be without our ads and where would we be without our sponsors?
Yes.
Who brings this fine program today, Rick?
Yeah, we are excited to talk about our sponsor, Miracle. Thank you so much, Miracle, again, because you don't need another tool. You actually need a growth partner. The Miracle platform is powering the next era of retail for the brands and retailers who are ready to move, powered by AI and built for what's next. Thank you, Miracle. If you're actually seeing, they have this clever, Adrian released a clever Santa Quits video.
Santa Quit, yeah.
Santa Quits. I thought that was really clever on LinkedIn. Go check it out. If you don't follow Adrian Nussenbaum, I think it's also been reposted around. So
yeah, I thought it was really great. I didn't get to it before I compiled my advertising montage recap. Otherwise, it would have made the cut for sure. It was very good. So kind of with that said, we are going to go back. We did this last year. You know, this is the time where I think ads are okay. They're acceptable. It's almost like the Super Bowl, but for the holidays. And you like to see what comes out. What are the hot toys? What are people going to be talking about? Big brand, big budgets get thrown at these things. So I've got a couple. I would say holistically, I have been somewhat underwhelmed this year. Feels like there's either recycled content or there is like just kind of not that like catchy little ad, you know? I don't know how you feel, Rick.
Yeah, I've been sufficiently whelmed.
I love it. Yeah. I'm just whelmed.
Yeah,
okay, just whelmed. Okay, so I did, though, have one for you. So we're going to start with the farmer's dog. And break out your tissues, because if you watch this one, it is an homage to your pets, who you guys know, like, I love my dog, Banks. Basically, he is the only child that loves me unconditionally and never talks back. My life would be in shambles if I didn't have this dog. And so this one really tugged on the heartstrings because it's real people. They're celebrating their pets. They're talking about how special they are to them. And then at the end, you know that you got to treat your pets well. You got to buy a farmer's dog. So I thought that one was pretty good.
I like that. That's definitely cute.
It was really cute. And it was around Thanksgiving too. So it was not like holiday-ish, but it was like thankful, grateful in that theme. So yeah,
love it.
All right. So the next one up is, this is from Lego. And I thought it was really clever because it's all kind of starting around the phone and isolation and the kids just doom scrolling. And shout out to Australia, who has like a social media ban under 16. We might need that for like other ages as well, but we'll leave that there. with Lego, I just thought it was really clever because they do it to the Lionel Richie, like, hello, is this me you're looking for? And the Legos are dragging the kid out. They're showcasing basically every Lego possible, so which gets you into the Marvel fandom.
So cute.
Wicked, you know, fandom. Will Arnett from Batman, you know, gives a high five here. And then at the end, is it play you're looking for? So I just thought it was very creatively done, showcasing all the different toys that Lego makes and bringing back play, which is what we want.
But Lego's always a hit with kids.
Yeah, 100%. That store's never not crowded with a line. And their drops are always really good. Okay, so my honorable mention, speaking of recycled content, I will give it to Amazon. This ad came out in 2023, and it's still been on repeat. It's like an oldie but goodie. So Amazon's like, we don't need to recreate and reinvent the wheel. We stick with the formula. It works. People still shopping. They're in the consideration set, and all of it's really just about creating memories and how quickly you can get stuff delivered. So there you go.
I love it.
Yeah. That's me and you, Rick. We'll be sledding on that hill.
Yeah, when we're 75.
That's right. When we're 75, not on social media, we're going to be sledding.
Right. Exactly.
All right. All right. So now we can get into Headline Hangover. Okay, so I'm up. So here we go, Rick. Uber is teaming up with who to offer merchants 1-hour delivery?
I feel like I should have studied this week. I feel like I'm getting hints from our producer, eBay.
Oh, so close. Shopify. So last week we talked about Amazon testing that 30-minute delivery in certain cities. And this is the race war for how quickly you can get something. You know, payments.com ran a survey and said like basically 60% of people are making a decision on what they're buying based on that speed of delivery. And so what's happening here is Shopify and Uber are teaming up 1-hour delivery for millions of merchants. And it's really just an integration, very smartly done, being able to now take all of these Shopify stores that might have localized presences and allow them to take advantage of quick delivery. So I think it's really sharp. We'll see how it all plays out. But Rick, the delivery wars are on, and Shopify and Uber are like, hold your phone, Amazon, we're in the mix.
Right. No, that's great. Maybe next time I will get one.
Yeah.
All right. You're up now. Mm. Our next story is Walmart launches blank in Metro Atlanta.
Is it 1-hour delivery?
No, I'm sorry.
Drone delivery.
So
can I go to the producer? Can I vie for partial credit? I had the word delivery.
How much partial credit can one woman get? That's really my question. Ultimately, look, Walmart has tested drones for a while. This is actually a partnership with delivery technology company Wing, according to a press release that they issued on December 3rd. So they are talking about significant expansion in drone delivery. It's something been tested over several years. Atlanta is a stop, then Houston, Charlotte, North Carolina, coming to Kakalaki.
And North Carolina, come on.
Yeah, what?
Eddie Pablo.
Raise up.
Yeah, take your shirt off and whip it around your head just like a helicopter.
Or like a drone. Right. There you go. So they've had a few successes Walmart has with Dallas-Fort Worth. They announced plans in 2024 to deliver to 1.8 million homes. and they deliver thousands of orders weekly in Fort Worth, including eggs, doesn't seem like the best choice. Ground beef seems heavy, and avocados also seem heavy. So where, if you're in the Dallas area and you are listening to this show, drop us a line. We would love for you to film a drone coming to your house. We will guarantee to credit you and play it on the show.
That's right. I want to just see avocados dropping from the sky.
Sounds scary.
It does a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's see how that all goes down. That could be kind of lethal, I think.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's like a coyote roadrunner situation.
Yeah. Instead of an anvil, you're getting like pinged by an avocado.
Right. At least it's healthy.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. So here we go. Last one to round us out. Saks Global is blank.
Oh, my. There's the words that come to mind. I probably shouldn't say the first thing that comes to my brain. Alive? Dead?
Oh, stuck. They're stuck. And
dead was
stuck.
Dead was my really what was in my head.
I would have taken
stuck
dead.
Is close. I
would have given you dead because that's probably where we're going to land. We've got some Houston. We have some cash flow problems.
Oof.
What is happening at Saks Global, as you know, has been a bit of a buildup, and I just want to walk you through the chronology of where those cracks have started to appear. So 2023, Hudson's Bay basically raises roughly $340 million after months of delayed vendor payments. It was framed as a temporary liquidity issue. By 2024, these vendors are starting to say the quiet part out loud. Frustrations going in the open. If you remember, like dozens of brands go public and they start to tell the publications that they've been not paid entirely. Hundreds of thousands of dollars were owed per label. Some brands were halting shipments. All of this is happening at the same time that Neiman's deal was being negotiated, which was also just kind of like, how is this all going down?
Right.
Early 2025, the Valentine's Day vendor letter, basically Saks Global sent the Harry Potter owls, but not in a good way, to roughly 2,000 vendors, basically saying new orders are going to be paid in 80 to 90 days. Old invoices will be repaid over 12-month installments starting mid-year. Vendors report unpaid balances going back as far as 18 months. And if brands refuse to ship and abide by these terms, we'll just replace you. With whom? I don't know. Maybe some of the brands that are selling on Shein and Temu, but here we go.
Ouch.
Yeah. So now the vendor payment is roughly at $275 million. That was like as of mid to late like this year. They get that $600 million financing package. And now kind of all things is surfacing. Financials are showing 2024 revenue down 10% to $7.3 billion. EBITDA loss of $102 million.
Oof.
Yeah. And Hilden, one of the largest apparel factory firms, has paused shipments after many missed payments. So this is just rough o'clock here.
It's 100%. That's what time it is in Saks headquarters, whatever that is. I mean, going back a few years now, Saks Global was created as an entity to separate the e-commerce business from the stores business. And they came up with this cockamamie and convoluted way to, you know, try to unlock the value of the e-com business to increase the, like, to, you know, I'm sure to pay the investors somehow.
That's
right. And the stores business was dragging the business down. Well, now Saks Global is being dragged down by the whole thing. So we have some problems here when it seems like the focus seems to be on financial engineering, and everything you hear is about this person not being paid on time or this term. But where's the customer in all this?
They're not. Well, the customer, I meant to share you this screenshot. The customer is getting 60% off, which, can you imagine Saks advertising 60% off? I kind of think, like, I thought it was like dark days. I had to double check. Like, is it really 60% off, because I remember sitting in Saks offices like long ago as we were trying to partner with them, bring, you know, some of their like liquidation inventory onto eBay. And it was like, we won't degrade our brand. And, you know, desperate times, desperate measures, I guess.
Yeah, it's, and I think we're in desperate times here. So we'll see if they're able to come. Yeah.
Hey, but you know, Rick, I know you love your Gucci, so you can store that at some 60% off.
Yeah, only Gucci Prada here.
That's right. Gucci Prada, Versace.
Gucci Prada Louis.
Yeah, totally. So you at least get some good deals.
Yeah, that's actually the same thing I hear when I walk down Canal Street and like, Gucci Prada Louis.
That's right. They maybe they'd be scoring them from Saks now.
Ooh, it's too soon. Too soon.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. So let's see if I can bring it home and get any points on the board.
Yet. Yes. Our next one up is Urban Outfitters tackles complex regulatory environment with blank supply chain platform.
Hmm. New, enhanced, AI-powered.
Search your feelings. You know it'd be true, Miss Lisewski. AI-powered must be the answer.
I'm feeling very dumb right now.
The Urban Group is really a trio of brands, as everyone is aware. Urban Outfitters, Anthropologie, actually Terrain and Nuuly. I was thinking about Nuuly. About Trailly, not about Terrain. And so they are partnering, you know, France, the EU, the US, you know, suppliers. There's like Uyghur forced labor protection act. And so when you have hundreds, thousands of vendors, collecting data from vendors is hard. Mm-hmm. And understanding, they give you all these. And how does this data come in? It doesn't come in a structured way. It comes in PDFs and emails and like all these things. So like, how do you ingest all this data such that number one is, you know what to kick out, you know what to supply to regulatory agencies, you know what to give to the carriers for import and export, and you know what to display on your website so you can give your consumer accurate information about what exactly they're buying, why they should buy it, the traceability. They're also enabling supply chain traceability and transparency with this. And so automating their compliance workflows, I really believe, especially for multi-brand retailers, is kind of essential at this point, because just the manual way to do things, no retailer has the margin to afford that anymore. And so I'm actually excited that Urban Outfitters is leading the way here. And I think you'll see many to follow.
That's right. And AI is going to solve all our problems. And I can't believe I didn't guess that. So feeling super dumb right now.
I think that's a negative point for you, not guessing AI.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see what the jury says here, our producers. But you know what? Speaking of data and who knows what to do with data, it's the interview that we're about to release here with James Lang. Can you give the audience a bit more about our conversation, who James is?
Yeah, James Lang is the head of marketplace at Ulta Beauty. And we are super excited to present to you the interview. We do an intro with him, so I won't belabor it too much now. But retail veteran, has been on the retailer side, has been through a software vendor, and Ulta pulled him back into the retail side to launch a marketplace. Can't quit retail. We won't let you.
We won't let you.
So you're going to hear more about that today. I'm excited. Here's how we show it to you.
Let's roll it.
All right. We are here with James Lang, the head of marketplace for Ulta Beauty, and would love to start this conversation a little bit about your background, career, and why you can't ever seem to escape the clutches of retail.
Thanks, Rick. That's an amazing question. I'm really appreciative to be, you know, live with you guys today. I think, you know, for me, my career has really spanned retail from start to finish. I started out the first half of my career in consumer electronics, always a merchant. So I've bought and sold everything you can think of, from ink, toner, and paper to digital cameras, and then made the leap into department store retailing about halfway through my career. And you know, that spanned Kohl's at the beginning of their journey, transitioning to JCPenney and then Belk. And then to your point, I tried to sneak out of retail. So I tried to consult for a little bit. I went to work for a company that I had partnered with for years, one that you guys are very familiar with as well, in ChannelVisor, you know, Commerce Hub, now Rhythm. And for me, you know, I think I'd spent the last 15 years very hardcore in unowned inventory strategies. How can you do more with less? The warehouses are too full, packages are too big, transportation is too tough. How can you start to leverage, you know, the network to really drive that? And so I would fashion myself as one of the pioneers in this space and really being able to drive, you know, these strategies for several companies and continuing to do that now that I'm at Ulta. So the lure was too great, you know, with the prospects of being the very first specialty beauty retailer to do a marketplace. This was a no-brainer. I was super excited to jump into this.
Yeah, when Ulta is just such a powerhouse in the category, beauty is such a fun category. Ulta is often described as a retailer, but it does feel more like a platform. And so, you know, you talk about this shift in strategy of unowned inventory. So it does feel like the next era of growth from your perspective is less about selling things and more about like curating opportunity and possibility. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we want our marketplace to be fully integrated, you know, on Ulta.com and in our app. We don't want the guests to have to think about where they're shopping. Are they on a marketplace or are they on core Ulta? Right. We want them to feel like it's theirs. And we want to be unified. So one cart, one checkout, one rewards program, amazing, easy returns, you know, via Happy Returns in all of our stores. We really want her to be at the intersection of wherever she can find amazing product, amazing brands, and discover those. We want to be able to help her in that journey. It's an amazing opportunity for us, and it's also an amazing opportunity for our guests.
The idea that a marketplace can look like a first-class retail experience hasn't always been the case because they've either just treated as this sort of second and third-class citizens. How do you build a marketplace that still acts like Ulta to its guests?
Yeah, I think you have to keep the guest at the center of everything, right? And so we very much pride ourselves, you know, and I think one of the phrases that we've coined, and I'm stealing it from somebody that I work with, maybe my boss, think of it as the second floor to our digital store. And so these are all the brands, these are all the products that you would naturally expect to see, right? So you have the core assortment that we have that we really balance and are really proud of and do an amazing job for our guests. And now we're able to branch out into complementary categories, but do it in a way that's very thoughtful. Same vetting process, same curation. It's invite only, so not everybody gets in. Mm-hmm. It really is, we want to love them as much as they love us and really allow brands into our ecosystem. And then the guest wins, right? It's a win-win for everybody. The brand gets access to our 45 million loyalty members, and then our guests get access to brands and products that they previously weren't able to get from us. And doing that again in a unified way really helps us ensure that we're keeping her at the center, and wherever she goes, we're going to follow. And you know, we're going to let our assortment lead, and we're going to let our strategies, you know, really be led on how to satisfy her and keep her shopping, you know, within Ulta Beauty.
Yeah, I love that. And it's not always so easy. You know, you think about lots of retailers have embarked in these types of experiences. How do you think about how you bring that to market and like the technology that you're using? Can you dive into that? Like what's really been the anchor point of making sure that experience works well?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have been around for a little bit, and there is a platform that we chose in Miracle to really power our marketplace that are the battle tested, you know, veterans in this space, right? And I've led a marketplace initiative with them in a prior location and you know, made it successful. And they're the benchmark, right? And so in picking a platform that is not only battle tested, it's also harnessed in all different you know, retail verticals. So we're able to leverage the learnings across what may not be, you know, direct competition with us, but the goods and the bads, and how do we help scale together. You have to have great tech. And so for us, picking Miracle was a no-brainer. You know, having them help us really scale, having a very robust offering, you know, from Miracle Connect all the way through, you know, our payout solution really allows us to have a very fully integrated, you know, ecosystem that really enables us to scale quickly, you know, and for us being able to scale with over 100 brands on day one, was very exciting for us. Right. And I think that's the key is you have to have people that can scale with you. And because Miracle has worked with, you know, retailers big and small, they have that ecosystem and that breadth of experience across.
Yeah.
And I think building any ecosystem, you have to have kind of like a North Star. Like, what are your defining principles for the things that you're going to stand for? What were those, some of those principles for you that you could, you, if you don't mind sharing those?
I think it's again, it's keeping the guest at the center. You know, we have spent the last 35 years building brand trust and building guest trust, right? And you can lose it just as quickly as you can gain it. And so for us, it's a very, very important. There's been lots of kind of backlash in the industry around the word marketplace, right? And the word sellers. And for me, I talk about brands. So we only work with brands. We don't work with diverters. We don't work with resellers. We really want the people who produce the products to be the ones that are on our marketplace. We don't have a buy box. We want a curated assortment that really is complementary to our core, but allows us to keep stretching our boundaries, asset light, margin accretive, and really allowing us to test and iterate quickly is really the kind of the tenets around where we want. But you can't go wrong at the end of the day if you keep the guest at the center.
Yeah.
You're always going to be okay.
Yeah.
They're clearly, I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of marketplaces, and you brought out two key decisions that you had to make early on, which is like, how should I think about retailers or resellers? And what about buy box? How did you come to those particular decisions? Because I think there might be other marketplace operators in the audience kind of wrestling with their decision. Not to say that they need to copy your approach, but to understand how you thought about those decisions might be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, again, we want to be authentic. We want to be true to who we are. We are very much all things beauty and wellness. And in order to do that, you again have to take care of the guest, but you also have to take care of the brands. You know, they have to feel the trust on both sides to be able to do that. And listen, I've been in this game a very long time, and I've seen some very squirrely decisions made by, you know, folks throughout the years. And I think you get greedy. And so what ends up happening is there's this desire of more is more, right? Endless aisle, extended aisle. For us, it's neither of those, because both of those are very muddy. And the second that you start to compromise your values, you turn into the thing that you see, you know, in the press, which is the kind of the ugly stain on commerce. And for us, you know, I just want, and I use analogies all the time, but pick your favorite brand of choice. No consumer is ever offended that their favorite brand ships directly from them. That's never going to be a thing, right? Everybody's super excited. Oh my God, I get it directly from them. I can't believe it. It's so awesome, because they know it came from them. And the second you start to dilute that, you start to kind of, the trust starts to waver, right? Now I'm getting it from somebody else, and then here's what it is. And I think, you know, the buy box piece, I think, was an easy one for me because again, that's the biggest erosion of trust from a brand if they're competing against themselves for the same product.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the holy grail for me, is to make sure that we protect, you know, that side of the ecosystem so that our guests feel excited and can trust, and the brands will continue to invest in us in bigger and better ways.
Yeah. A lot of times when retailers embark in these marketplace decisions, you know, they have to work through internal either myth busting or bringing people along. How did you guys navigate that? Was it a unanimous, like, oh, Thundercats go, we're so excited? Or was it one of those, like, yeah, you had to kind of work through some, you know, the Thundercats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. You know,
I didn't expect
was it
them to come out.
Yeah. Look, Rick, that's why I surprised you, you know? But yeah, or was it like you had to do some kind of coaching and bringing people along and lots of meetings? Like, how did you guys navigate some of maybe the internal either skepticism, if there was any?
Yeah. So I will say this, this has gone beautifully. I can't say it any better than that. From, you know, Keisha Steelman taking over as our CEO, immediately green lighting this as an initiative as part of her, you know, Beauty Unleashed strategy, and really having the tops down commitment support that filtered through all the teams, creating a great ecosystem of 20 plus sub work streams, everybody aligned across every, you know, function and discipline within our organization, all with a common goal. Everybody was super excited about launching. Everybody understands the value of doing this. And let's not kid ourselves. DCs aren't getting any bigger and nobody wants to go out and buy more of them. And owning inventory is hard because you have to make perfect decisions. And so it doesn't take a great mathematician to understand if I don't have to own it, but I can still make it profitable. I can still excite the guests. She gets to discover new brands and new products, and she stays here. Perfect, right? And you're right. In the past, I've gone the other way where I've had to do a little bit of a bottoms up sell job to make this initiative work. But here, not the case. Everybody aligned from a leadership standpoint. Everybody holding hands along the way. Very collaborative, very excited, and open to listen. And understands the challenges, right? And so for us, you know, we're navigating them together, but that's the best thing. And so when I say it couldn't have gone more beautifully, it can't. In the 20 plus years that I've been doing this, this is very, very unique in what we're building here and the collaboration we've had around the room.
Yeah, I love hearing that. And when I first, you know, heard about Ulta doing this marketplace, it's just brilliant. Like I thought, it's just so smart in where you guys are going. So I'm glad you didn't have to work through the internal hurdles, because then it makes focusing on the customer so much easier.
100%.
Yeah. I would love to talk about a little bit about the merchandising relationships that you have available at Ulta, because, you know, in the past, you know, as we all know, there are sort of well-documented examples of first party and third party being like, I would say like church and state, a little bit separated. It seems like you guys have a little bit more of a blended model. So talk to me about the opportunities really on both sides of the equation for brands and doing business with Ulta in the best way that works for them.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we built our marketplace to be collaborative and not competitive. You know, we want participation to be by invitation only. Mm-hmm. We're vetting for quality and authenticity, you know, compliance and guest relevance, right? So the exact same tenets that we have for any brand that would enter into, you know, our ecosystem. If you think about Ulta Beauty, we see thousands of brands that approach us, you know, every year. And until we unlocked the technology with Marketplace, the answer was always some yes, some not now, and some maybe never, right? Because you have to think about just the logistics of, where do you put the product? Do they have enough product? Are they ready for retail?
Yeah.
If I displace a current piece of assortment in our stores and I'm wrong, that's a recipe for disaster that some of us have lived through that you would prefer not to. And so making sure that we have that collaborative, non-cannibalistic nature, you know, from an internal lens and a merchandising lens really helps. And then for the brands, they really want to own their voice, right? And so brands get to retain pricing. You know, they, you know, have fulfillment control. We give them the stage. We give them access. We give them our platform to be able to show their products to our 45 million loyalty members, really allowing them to get into our ecosystem. So I think for us, my goal is to say yes to as many brands that make sense to both of us, right? To the brand and to Ulta Beauty, as we possibly can. We don't have a set goal of how many brands do I want in our assortment? How many SKUs do I want? It's just relevancy. And so if we see something amazing, we're able to act on it. If you think about all of the social darling brands that have come up, it takes us a matter of weeks versus months or years to action new brands, right? And when the trend moves, we can move with it because now we're not stuck holding tens of millions or hundreds of millions of, you know, dollars of inventory that is the old kind of working model for, you know, classic retail.
So it sounds like the primary goal from, you know, just from your answer is really, there's so many brands, we can't possibly say yes to any of them because it costs a lot of money. We have to guess perfectly for inventory reasons and all the things you talked about, why retail is hard. How about the other side? Are there brands that are your stock that are also interested in Marketplace, or do you not see it working in that direction?
I think you can. I think everything, we want to do two things. We want to meet the guests where they shop, whether it's on our phone, you know, via our app, on their, on, you know, their desktop computer, mobile computers, or in our stores. But then we also want the brands to seek the natural level where they belong as well, right? And so we absolutely see an opportunity where there are brands today where maybe we have a portion of their assortment, where we see there's a broader assortment or sub brands or subcategories that we haven't delved into as of yet, where we absolutely could see, you know, opportunities for us to be able to do that. But then also being able to unearth and discover new brands and start their journey and the trajectory out of our marketplace and into our stores could be an amazing opportunity. And I think that's something that, you know, again, historically, we haven't been able to do at the speed that we would like. And this affords us the ability to do that and then test and iterate. And the things we love, we'll lean in. And the things that we don't love so much, we'll pivot and we'll find some more things that we do love.
Yeah. Well, you've talked about this 45 million loyalty base, which like so many brands would and retailers would go for. So kudos. I mean, that's amazing. I would assume you also have lots of great data and insights that can help drive either your assortment strategy or where you need to fill in those holes mm-hmm. for customers, in addition to trend analysis. And of course, you know, the next TikTok hot talk, you know, Rick's always on TikToks. Yes. Yes. Granny oh, yeah. Talk was his jam for a long time.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, just curious, you know, how does like data play a role and what are the ways that you're using those insights to help shape that customer experience, and whether it's like marketplace related or even just how you round out what's important in your loyalty program? I'd love to dive into that.
Yeah. I think for us, we want to attract new guests. Mm-hmm. We want to build the basket. We want to retain or reactivate ones that maybe have left because we didn't have the brands that mattered to them or somewhere along the, you know, the retail spectrum, to really bring them back in. Absolutely. We're using data to do all the things that you know, described around, you know, really understanding what motivates her, right? You know, what's the good, better, best strategy within some of the different categories that we need to look at? Where is there a natural adjacency, you know, within wellness and the beauty journey where we think we have an opportunity, whether it's grooming, whether it's luxe, whether it's pro hair, you know, personal care, et cetera. I always look at it from a personal lens first. And as I am also a shopper and also a loyalty member, I can't give all of my money to Ulta Beauty as much as I would love to. And so every time I have an opportunity to look at our assortment, go through our guest data that we have to really understand, you know, where she is spending her energy, where she would like more, you know, what are we seeing in null search? What is the guest sentiment? NPS, you know, what is she telling us? And then how can we go solve, you know, that gap for her is how we really use this. And again, some of it's assumptive because, you know, we feel we have the right to win in certain categories. And so you bring it in and then the guest tells you instantly. They either buy things or they don't. And if they buy things, they'll tell you what they're buying and why they're buying it. And if they don't, that speaks pretty loudly. And then you have to tinker a little bit and you have to kind of figure out around the periphery what you think, you know, would make sense. Because we feel the categories are you know maybe right, but just the brand mix or the price points, et cetera, may not be, you know, quite right. And again, because we aren't holding, you know, the inventory, it mm-hmm. allows us to pivot a little bit quicker, working in concert with our brand partners as well, right? They're informing us as much about what they're seeing in, you know, the what they're seeing from their brand, mm-hmm. you know, in the market, and then is it holding true with us? And you know, it allows us to collaborate as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, we're talking around a little bit the topic of personalization, where like, how do we know what this person is going to respond to as she comes to the site? I feel like a lot of retailers talk about personalization as a pitch, and it very much feels like your angle is much more around customer intimacy. I would love for you to just define the term for a second. Like, how do you guys think about customer intimacy? What are the pillars of it for you?
You know, I think, for me, listen, my primary responsibility is marketplace. So my head is buried in the marketplace sand all day, every day. And so for me, it's really around assortment and guest experience and watching her through the funnel and really understand when she gets to our website, is she able to find quickly what it is that she's looking for? Mm-hmm. Are we able to build out the categorization where these products make sense? Do the product presentations look amazing? As she goes through the, you know, the shopping journey, can she use her coupons? Can she use a gift card? Can she get loyalty points? If she doesn't like it, can she return it, and how easy? Yeah. So for me, the intimacy is really around her journey and really understanding how she buys and sells things within the broader scope of what we're doing, you know, within e-commerce. Absolutely. I think we're looking to tackle all the same, you know, challenges everybody else is how do we make sure everything is as relevant as it can be, using all of the kitschy terms and all of the things that are, you know, permeating throughout retail, you know, AI being the biggest, right? And I think that's something that, you know, every retailer is trying to figure out how they're going to lean in on. And we have teams dedicated to really drive, you know, those initiatives forward. And I will be the recipient and the benefactor of, you know, that amazing work, because it'll just make my product stickier, you know, within the guest journey.
Hey, it's pretty good. We're 21 minutes in and the first reference to AI. So that didn't happen in the first 5 minutes. So look, there are other things we can talk about. Guys.
There are. I use it in everything, but I try not to let it run my life. But
it's getting close. It feels
it is.
Like.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you think about that journey and you coming into Ulta, you're watching it so closely. Are there things that have surprised you that you didn't expect? You know, we're always sort of in this mode of A/B testing. Like, what about this assortment? What about this path? Some things that you weren't surprised at, and maybe things that did surprise you as you went through this.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm always surprised. Thankfully, I'm always surprised that my playbook is kind of my playbook. And you know, I morph it over the years on what got me here won't get me there. So I take the learnings from the past and I apply new things as I go forward. And I'm always excited when, again, I take that lens of a shopper and look for ways to solve the problems of if I could see it in the world and I could have it here, will the guest respond? And so it's always very exciting to see that happen and to see how quickly she finds things that I'm like, I have no idea how you found that. That we launched that yesterday. I have no idea how you found that in you know, the 35,000 other things that we have, but you did, and you bought a lot of it and you continue to buy a lot of it. So that's one surprising thing at just how personal the beauty space is. And how I want what I want. And when I see that kind of play out, it's super, super exciting. And it's something that, you know, I'm continuing to be you know, rewarded with. The things that, you know, kind of keep me up at night, how do I repeat that every single day? And how do I make sure that if we have something that doesn't quite pan out, that we quickly understand what it was. And we have a solve for it, right? We have big ambitions, we have big ideas. And I think for me, it's just, again, remaining authentic, keeping the guest at the center, and really driving and learning what it is that makes her tick, I think is, you know, the thing we have to do. And you know, I've learned that lesson a little bit the hard way in the years where, you know, as a retailer, as a merchant, I thought I knew more than others. And so you try to tell the customer, this is what I would like you to purchase because I know better than you. And quickly you find out you can't. They'll definitely reward you when you're right, but they will definitely penalize you when you're not. And so I've learned that by inviting the guest in and helping them understand, you know, what we're offering, it's just been a better route. But again, always surprised when I find a new widget and it pops up online and magically it starts selling you know, I couldn't believe it. And just kept getting more of them.
Yeah. I have a question on the seller relationships or the brand relationships.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm using my old school marketplace terminology. So on those brand relationships, how did you guys decide what the parameters were? You know, there's a lot of even small decisions you have to make, like when you're building a house. All right, well, what now I'm like, what's the light switch cover going to look like? Right.
Yeah.
What are the knobs? So how do you guys decide? What are the rules? What are the parameters? How do you think about that experience? How are you monitoring that from a standards perspective? And then who owns those conversations when you may need to like keep a brand in check or provide feedback? How are you guys managing that?
I think it's twofold. I think, you know, we have a brand ethos, you know, within Ulta Beauty and we treat every brand as if we would treat ourselves. And we want to make sure that they have an amazing experience. We want to make sure that if I'm buying, you know, $100 million of their inventory, we love and partner and collaborate just as much as if you know, they're a marketplace brand that is just emerging into the marketplace, new founder, you know, new product line, et cetera. And by doing so, we're making sure that we're just holding the brand to the Ulta standard. And so we're not deviating on what we expect. You know, again, keeping the guest at the center. I need you to have attractively priced, amazing products. I need you to be able to pick, pack, and ship it in a very, very fast manner. I need it to show up amazing when it gets to their doorstep. I need them to love it. And then if for whatever reason there's an issue that they, you know, they choose to return it, I need to make that seamless too. And so, you know, from a brand's perspective, those that can kind of fall into that regular mold, which all of them have so far, knock on wood, it allows us to really, you know, harness the kind of the collective power of Ulta Beauty and just keep it the same. We don't want the guest to put things in their bag and feel like there's a differentiated experience. We want to feel like when they, you know, when stuff shows up at their house 3 or 4 days from now, it's indistinguishable, right? One of them just happened to ship from a warehouse and one of them happened to ship directly from a brand. And, you know, so those decisions made it really easy. We just didn't compromise and we just made it the same so that we could keep it as unified. And again, you know, I'll keep saying it, keeping the guest at the center. We need to look at her and how she shops because she doesn't understand our fulfillment models. That's not really for her.
It's not her problem, really.
It isn't. She just wants a good product. And as long as it can get to her, you know, on her front doorstep, if it can't be picked up in a store, then that's the best that, you know, we would hope for. And that's the experience we expect our brands to kind of adhere to.
I wanted to spend a little bit of time on the transformation happening at Ulta. I think you're in a fortunate position, as you've said a couple of times. You had a new CEO coming in who this was a priority, and you were able to sort of bada bing, bada boom. And now you have a marketplace with Miracle. It likely wasn't exactly the same at your past experience. And I think for a lot of marketplace operators, they would, you know, a new marketplace is, it's many more growing pains. Mm-hmm. And so I would love for you to like put yourself in those shoes for a second and offer some advice for how to change your relationship with inventory, how to think of yourselves more as a platform. You know, as you went through Ulta, I'm sure, although your general experience has been fantastic, I'm sure there were difficult moments from time to time we could also speak about.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple things, right? So I think the biggest lessons that I've learned is the guest's obsession with amazing product. It never goes out of style. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the stuff that has been merchandised, you know, for decades and decades, or the ecosystem that's with today, you have to listen to the guest. Because if you don't listen to them and they don't feel that you're authentic, they leave and they go where they feel more authentic, and they go where they feel that they're getting the, you know, the treatments that, you know, that they want. You know, the tools keep changing, you know, loyalty programs, digital platforms, you know, now marketplace, you know, but the principles are always the same. The guests, you know, you want to meet the guests where they are, and you want to keep evolving with them. And so if they choose to, you know, shop however they would love to, AI being the thing, we said it again, that's coming next. You have to be ready and you have to, you know, spend some time in that. But if I talk about kind of the human factor about transformation, transformation is ongoing. This, the nature of the word transformation, we're never done. And you know, there's no ceiling to this. It absolutely takes the right talent. It for sure takes alignment. And you have to have some pragmatism kind of, you know, baked in there as well. And I think for us, you know, we're balancing that optimism, you know, with the hard work and you know, the cultural change. And again, it is scary to a certain extent,
right?
Because we're taking something that we've done for the last 35 years and we're putting a slant to it.
Yeah.
But the ethos is the same. All things beauty and wellness. We want to make sure that it's amazing for our guests. We want to make sure that they have the ability to find great products. You know, we wanted this thing to be asset light. We did not want to, you know, bury this thing in the inability to scale or pivot or, you know, be you know, light on our feet. It's got to be margin accretive. You know, that's the wonderful thing of marketplace is you flow almost all of the profitability to the bottom line. And so when you strip out all of the, you know, the overhead, now you again are not just chasing margin rate, which is kind of the fatal flaw of every retailer. You are chasing the guest, mm-hmm. and you are satisfying her needs. And again, she'll continue to buy from you if you can satisfy what she needs. And so by doing that, you know, that's been a huge win for us. You know, it's all about our teams. You know, it's curation. It's definitely collaborating and partnership. And it's our leadership staying, you know, connected, right? It's in our DNA. And so that's kind of the secret sauce that we have, you know, within Ulta Beauty is we have a very connective tissue, you know, throughout the teams. And this is probably the most winningest culture I've ever been around.
That's awesome.
Where everybody is excited to play in the same team and find their value and what they bring to the table.
Yeah. Speaking of winning, you know, it's the big dance of retail or the March Madness of retail, right? Holidays are here. Lots of things coming up. What are you excited about with like either the marketplace assortment, Ulta's assortment at large? Like how are you weaving some of these marketplace partners into your promos? And how, because that always doesn't happen either.
Yeah, I would say yes. I would say the easy answer is yes. I'm super excited to go through our first, you know, peak season you know, with our marketplace live. We have zero idea. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek on how high is high for this holiday season,
from a
marketplace standpoint. Yeah. We feel like, and it's easy because the base is, you know, from zero and growing.
Yeah.
Every week we set new records. And so
that's awesome.
It's exciting to see. And now we're getting the benchmark and baseline. What is that peak season going to look like? Mm-hmm. So that we can start quickly pivoting into what's the plan and how am I going to break it out for next year? And
right.
The reward for great work is more work. which, you know, which
and you
we
have
love.
Comps.
And you have comps.
Oh, right. Now you get to talk about lapping.
Yes, I have to lap my own decisions and I have to start figuring out all the things that happen. But, you know, again, I think for us, just super excited to have a connectivity between just, you know, our merchant partners, our core assortments, and just the guest indistinguishably be able to, you know, shop our assortments online. And really solve their conundrums, right? And I think as long as we continue to do that, we'll continue to weave more and more in. When I think about promotionality, I really think about brand and product. I don't think necessarily about, you know, specific promotional offers so much as where does it make sense? How can you help the you know, the guest understand that this is a new, you know, whether it's grooming, whether it's, you know, different areas of wellness, you know, et cetera, where we can layer in more of that discoverability. You know, did you know we carry X? And did you know that this brand is now available Y? We've seen that, you know, bear fruit pretty quickly. You know, from, like I said before, from the guest acquisition standpoint, you know, seeing new guests come in and purchasing new brands. And as you guys know, when they buy something, they typically don't stop buying and they buy more things. So, you know, we introduced them and brought them to the website or to our app with brand X. And they bought brand X plus brand Y. And that's, you know, a great kind of testament to the group and you know, what we've started to put together.
That's exciting. Yeah. Just keep that dry shampoo flowing because that's where I'm keeping you in business. I promise.
Yeah. 100%. I'm looking for some things that help me. The dry shampoo is not really for me, but I'll figure out some things.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation, James. We really appreciate the chance to get to know you a little better, as well as for our audience to get to know Ulta Beauty, how these vertical marketplaces are doing and scaling factors in the future. Since you opened the door to comps and next year, we'd love for you to recap at the end a little bit about what can we expect from Ulta Marketplace in the future in terms of features and functions, not just the assortment side of it.
You know, it's going to be nuanced. And I think what you're going to see is it's going to be advantaged by everything that we're doing within our website. So, you know, no spoilers, but as we continue to advance the ball in digital commerce.
I got to try.
We like breaking news here, James.
No
we got to try
news.
Really hard.
I know. You know, keeping the guest at the center, you know, app is obviously something that we're near and dear.
Yeah.
And just making sure that we have a great shopping experience. I think if we can have a great front end experience backed by a great back end experience, we'll continue to see the rewards that we're seeing, you know, in our comps, you know, both digitally, comps in stores, and then soon to be comps within our, you know, within our marketplace. I've got a little bit of time before I anniversary myself, but it definitely will be, you know, as we get into the September, October timeframe of next year, I'll start anniversarying my own decisions. But
yeah,
you know, you'll see it'll continue to just be a very clean, very transparent shopping experience that I think, you know, won't look foreign or won't look, you know, overly revolutionary, but will be very clean and consistent, and you'll be excited about what we continue to show up with.
Yeah, that's so great. And I just really congratulate you on everything you guys have built. We often don't find conversations, especially as you talk about retailers and marketplaces, that feel like as organic as what you all have built. And a lot of that has to do with vision, as well as, like you said, just making the decisions to keep the customer first and not create friction. So I really am cheering you guys on. I think it's so smart, and we're really excited to, hopefully we'll have you back and you can kind of tell us how your holidays went.
Absolutely. No, I really appreciate you guys. This has been super exciting. And as I said in the beginning, this, you know, obviously this is my passion, and I could go on for years talking about this, and it's hard to keep me quiet. So any, you know, excited for the opportunities in the future. And if there's an opportunity for us to chat about the next evolution of this, I'm happy to make a return appearance.
I hope we're your first call again. Like I said.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you guys carry a lot of favor in the industry. And then, you know, again, I listen to your podcasts and you know, I'm excited when I get to be a part of things that,
thank you.
You know, typically I would just listen and not be the primary. So it's okay.
But we're awesome. Big fans. Thank you so much for being Absolutely. Here. Wish you the best for the rest of the holiday season, and excited to hear what's next in your marketplace journey.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much again, James.
Thank you.
Bye.
That's going to do it for this week's Watson Weekend. If you've made it this far, you're either a retail masochist or you just love the sound of our voices.
I'm going to say it's option two. Either way, we appreciate you. If you've enjoyed today's show, give us a follow, give us a like wherever you're listening. Leave us a review, preferably with 5 stars. We'll take 4.5 if you're feeling a little bit stingy. Yeah, it's okay.
And don't just lurk on the channel. Share this with a friend, colleague.
That's right. We're kind of like your little sidekick, helping you bring everybody along in your organization. You can find us on LinkedIn, your Spotify, all the places. And all the links are in the show notes, too.
Big thanks to the community, our listeners, as well as the Kaplan Snacks that keep this circus running. Sponsors, you know who you are. And if you're not a sponsor yet,
I mean, what are you actually doing with your marketing budget? Give us a ring. Call us. Send an email. Rick loves when people slide into his DM. It's his favorite place.
Until next time, I'm Rick Watson.
And I'm Jessica Lisewski. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Now, you can feel like you can go on and do something better with your life. We'll see you next week.
Bye.